How are you doing, everybody? This is episode 73 of Marvin Sports and Life. And give you guys the second. If you're coming on in, hit that like, hit that share button. If you're coming on in, please hit that like and that share button. You guys see what we got going on here? We got a special guest, Mr. Demont.
Devin.
Lamont.
Okay. Yeah, Lamont Randolph.
Devin Lamont Randolph. Yeah. Oh, see, the Lamont.
Yeah, you're going to blame that on my wife. She set up that Facebook page. Okay. I'll tell you about that. That's another story.
We thank Mr. Devin for being here with us today. As we do this episode, you guys come on in. And you guys have been very excited about the episode because I tell people I judge the episodes about how when I put the flyers out there, I see how the flyers doing and the flyers
Oh, that's good, man. I feel special.
Yeah,
man.
Shout out to cousin. I don't know who cousin is. Hey, cousin, say this is my cousin. Y'all check it out. So guys, we definitely love what we got going on here. You guys coming on here, not liking that share button. Okay, let's get this thing started. Who is Devin?
Yeah, wow. So I'm a native of St. Matthews.
Okay.
I met my wife, from Charleston.
Okay.
I own Randolph's.
Okay. Okay.
But
okay.
A lot of people.
Hold on. That's slow it down.
Yeah.
Okay. We're gonna start from.
Oh, you want to go all the way?
Yeah.
Back.
Yeah. We're gonna go back.
Okay.
We're gonna start from. Okay. So you're from St. Matthews.
Yeah, I'm from St. Matthews.
Born and raised
on the playground. Where I spent most of my days. I'm St. Matthews, man. Shout we out. Call it the Mat. Shout out to St. Matthews.
Shout out to St. Matthews. I got a good bit of friends from St. Matthews, and I know they are watching.
Fair enough. Yeah, man. So I'm from St. Matthews. Went to Calhoun County High School.
Okay, okay.
And had no desire to go to college or any of that. Just wanted to kind of finish.
Just finish.
Got expelled, kicked out of school.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me tell you.
Okay. So because from the outside looking in, I would have never thought you had.
Oh yeah, man.
That kind of story.
Even I have enough time for it. It's yeah. So I mean, the abridged version of it is, I just got involved in the wrong crowd. Didn't really know who I was as a person.
Okay.
Had no desire of really completing school. I barely graduated, like 2.4.
I can't.
Yeah, 2.4, and you know, just having good family, being in a great environment, was able to accept. An opportunity to go to Claflin.
Okay.
I was conditionally accepted at Claflin, actually, which means like it was the very bare minimum. Ended up just kind of really thinking about who I was as a person.
Okay.
And ended up getting a fellowship and accepted into the Honors College at Claflin.
Hold on, slow down. So you went from barely finishing high school to getting the Claflin Honors Program.
Yeah, so there's some abridged versions in that because before I even got to Claflin, I actually started college at Johnson & Wales in Charleston because I was like, well, if I'm going to figure out what I want to do with my life, I like to eat, so maybe I can
be a chef,
you know, and really that's kind of how I had an affinity for creating different dishes, thinking about custom flavors as it relates to gelatos, Italian ices, because, you know, I had a desire to be a cook. A chef per se, and first semester got kicked out. Ended up actually, it's funny because I remember going to the campus at Johnson & Wales, and it was like, okay, I'm gonna learn to be a chef, and once I graduate, you know, I'll open up my own business.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to do a restaurant, so I got kicked out my freshman year at Johnson & Wales, and it's crazy because you know when you're destined to do something. But you kind of have to feel your way through it.
Correct.
Right. And so part of it was me trying to find who my identity was for as a person, mm-hmm. as a black male.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnson & Wales, I had so much freedom. And I realized that just wasn't who I was as a person. So I ended up getting kicked out. I was first put on academic probation.
Okay.
Got involved with the wrong crowds, using and selling drugs at the time. And
where is this?
This is, man, so this is early 2000. So I graduated from Calhoun County in 2002. So this would have been right around, this has probably been right around 2003.
Okay.
And found myself back at St. Matthews at my parents. So my first year.
How did that transaction going from you being at Johnson & Wales, you out the house, until you happen to come back home.
That was depressing, man. Cause you, here it is, you know, you're trying to escape something and you don't know what that something is. And then you realize like I'm back in the environment that I was trying to escape from. So it was through those experiences of being back home, man, I just really tapped into figuring out, it's like, look, you know, I made a promise to God and said, hey, you know, I know I screwed up. I know I was involved in the wrong crowds. I need to figure this thing out. You know, I need to find a way to really get myself back on track. And I have an appreciation for Claflin because I ended up just submitting my application and they conditionally accepted me.
Let me tell you, I'm not going to admit this. For somebody who barely got to high school myself, you must have faith of the mustard seed, because I'm not going to lie, for somebody with my my grades, I wasn't too bad, but I know I bet guys, I was afraid to even apply for Claflin because I just knew I was going to get accepted.
Yeah, man. So it's something special about Claflin in a lot of ways, man. Definitely shout out to, you know, Mr. Michael Ziegler, the director of admissions. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I actually was very honest with them in my application. I said, hey, look, I got involved. I was in trouble and I was in a bad crowd, but I really want a shot to make this thing happen. And he made it happen. I mean, he whatever he did, you know, his decision was just part of the journey, man. And he actually changed just the way I felt about myself and college. Because, you know, college is one of those things where, you know, people say it's not for everyone. But Claflin, you know, it made it happen for me. You know, I had a supportive environment of people that really, really kind of had my back, from, you know, President Tisdale, to former First Lady Tisdale, just a really good community of people that really helped push me.
I'm gonna give shout out my cousin Corinthia Rice, who's at Claflin at the time too, and I know how she talked about Claflin. I think she was an honor college too, and how she Claflin has a. I told somebody Claflin, like, I'm gonna tell you, well, I'm gonna talk trash about y'all for a second. Well, y'all Claflin, nice boy. That's one thing about y'all. Y'all love y'all school. Definitely, some people definitely. Like, I like my alma mater, they rule the colors.
Yeah.
But people from Claflin love Claflin University. And I think that might speak to the family atmosphere. Give me a small story without in my younger days.
Yeah. What you mean, man, younger days? Like,
I'm 34, but this is, I'm talking when I'm like 21, 22. And we would laugh as guys, because you can tell when you met a Claflin girl, because they'd say, if I come to your house, that's fine, but I'm coming like six deep. And I was like, it's always Claflin girls. And they said that they teach them that in orientation.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So it's funny. Yes. So, you know, anyone who's went to Claflin can tell you that we all have an affinity for the university, because it's a special place, because here you have someone that really didn't meet the standards per se, you know, when someone's looking at an application, like, you know, didn't have the perfect GPA, but just had just the commitment to make it happen. And, you know, the first year was unique because I still was navigating it and I didn't get into the honors program until my, you know, my sophomore year.
So did you go there with the mind to get an honors program, or you went there just to?
No, man, I just wanted to get a degree. Yeah,
okay.
And so I didn't even know what field I wanted to go in. And so I was like, well, you know, business might make sense, because I had already went to Johnson & Wales. So I had already realized that I wanted to start a business. So I ended up majoring in business. And then once I got admitted into the honors program, it kind of made me start thinking about, okay, like, I have people now counting on me. Like, they're now paying for me to go to school.
How do your parents feel about this transition? Because I know they see it.
Yeah. So my parents, man, they are kind of, you know, they mean a lot to me, not because they're my parents, but they kind of saw me at the lowest, and they really allowed me to be who I am. You know, some parents, you know, tend to say, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. They were just praying, man. And they, you know, their prayer was that I just make the right decision. And, to this day, I never forget kind of what they did for me when I was at my lowest. When I say I'm at my lowest, I'm talking about to the point where, you know, I'm having psychotic breaks. You know, I'm in a situation where I'm, you know, in a treatment facility, because I've been out on the street so much, smoking, drinking, and just all of that happened. And my parents saw that moment. Like, they saw me at my lowest.
Wow.
And they accepted me for that. You know, brother, I think that.
I'm going to tell you this right here now. Brother, I'm glad you're telling this story because I'm listening to your story. That's, you know what? That's what I get. That's what I get for not prejudging, but pre-notions. Definitely. About you. I figured, good kid, went through life, went to college, and just happened to find your way, find a business, and just successful. Man, this you.
Yeah, man. So
that's a testimony.
Yeah, man. So I think it's kind of why I really jumped into the area of being an entrepreneur, but it really kind of forced me to kind of really think about how can I make the greatest impact. So a lot of people know me as the owner of Randolph's, which is a very special place.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people don't know that, you know, I'm also on the faculty at USC. I actually teach, you know, in the School of Education, you know, where I look at Jewish and African-American relationships and experiences. Just a couple of summers ago, I ended up having a fellowship to study at Oxford, looking at anti-Semitism and race, and looking at divergence and convergence and what that looks like.
That is a different study, and I want to have you want to talk, because I have a very, not strong, but a very diverse outlook on that conversation. We definitely have to have you back.
Definitely.
I don't know. I know that even a study. I'm pretty sure. Well, everything has, you can study.
Yeah, man. So I graduated from Claflin in 2007 with my bachelor's, and then I ended up coming and working back at Claflin as an admissions counselor because I felt like that was an opportunity where I could really make the difference because someone made the difference for me. And so I would work with, you know, young kids from the Midwest, international, all over the country, and really recruiting and trying to bring them to Claflin and really sharing my story and letting people know, like, yes, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And I did that for about 3 years. And then, you know, I met my wife kind of in that process. So she was working in admissions at the College of Charleston at the time.
Okay.
And she allegedly said, and she'll probably put something on Facebook, that she had some students that kind of didn't meet the criteria for College of Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
And she saw me kind of on the road and she figured, you know, they may be a good fit for Claflin.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she said. And so
we'll give her that one.
Yeah, we'll give her that one. So needless to say, never saw the student, the students at all. But it was something very special about her, man. You know when you find, you kind of find that's unique, man. Fortunately, long story short, we ended up getting married, 8 years. We've known each other for about 12, but we're married for 8. And the crazy thing is my connection to her kind of really changed, like, not only my outlook on who I wanted to be, but just kind of my long-term vision for, like, creating wealth. And so when I met her, it was kind of like, hey, you know, at the end of
this,
the day,
this for the people. This for the people. I have discussions about that. You didn't just see a partner; you saw a partner that you can build wealth with, generational wealth.
Definitely. And it's something special, man. And so she and I had already talked about graduate school, and we kind of talked about it. And I told her, hey, I wanted to go overseas to study. Just kind of wanted to get out of South Carolina, and you know, she supported it, but I could tell that she didn't really, we were still dating at the time. So I think for her, it was kind of like, you know, you moving out of the country, you know, what does that mean, you know, for us? And then it was kind of selfish of me in a way because I had already realized that I wanted to build with her. And, but I never really asked her how we could build together. Right. So it was kind of like we were two forces coming together and then we should build. Right. She had her desires. She had the things that she wanted to do. And I needed to respect that. So I ended up just telling her some of the goals that I wanted to do. And we decided New York was kind of the place that we want. We went to visit a lot of different schools. I actually applied to NYU, the School of the Widener School of Public Service, because at this point, I started thinking bigger. I figured I wanted to really make a difference. And I thought, you know, and still think that government was kind of the way I wanted to go.
Okay.
So eventually I applied to Syracuse. She graduated from Syracuse and they denied me. And part of it was, you know, they said that, you know, I just didn't meet the criteria. But mind you, when I was applying to Syracuse, you know, I graduated with a 3.8 from Claflin. And, you know, I had everything kind of in place, like I thought. and they denied my application. And so
you actually got the good backstory.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I was like, I would probably be the good candidate, but I was applying because I thought that was a safe school. So mm-hmm. I only applied to two. I applied to Syracuse. Then I ended up applying to Cornell in New York. And so I was like, Cornell University will never accept me. I mean, it's Ivy League school. I mean, it's no brothers on the campus.
And for
like
those
that.
Who don't know, Cornell is one of the most prestigious colleges and one of the most prestigious colleges in the world.
Yeah. And so I remember going on the campus and I told my wife, I was like, you know, I don't know if I'll fit in here. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really see people that looked like me mm-hmm. on the campus. And so, you know what? I just did it. I submitted it. And it's funny because it was kind of my last year as a recruiter, and I can remember being in my office.
Mm-hmm.
I was picking up something from Golden China, and I came back to the campus in my office late lunch break, and the email pops up and say, hey, I want to, you know, congratulate you on your acceptance to Cornell. And by the way, we're giving you a fellowship. And when I saw that, man, it was crazy.
And what is a fellowship?
A fellowship was they gave me a certain amount of money to offset all of my costs, like housing. They also created a job for me, mm-hmm. and I didn't have to pay anything out of pocket. So the cost of tuition at Cornell was right at about $63,000 a year. And, you know, my master's was in public administration and a minor in policy because I wanted to understand how certain policies impact communities of color. Right. Because here I was, you know, from a small town and seeing that there was no opportunities. And I needed to understand how these policies kind of disenfranchise certain communities. Mm-hmm. Right. As it relates to health, as it relates to economic mm-hmm. opportunities. So it's like, all right, so I need to probably know about policy. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up getting a master's in social policy and a minor in mm-hmm. ed policy. And I graduated. Program was 2 years, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
How did your future wife enjoy staying in New York?
If you ask her now, she probably want to move back now. She loved New York. I'm a country boy. I'm from St. Matthews. For mm-hmm. me, I love the people. I love the culture. I love kind of just the diversity and infusion of different backgrounds and people. But it's cold, man. I'm from the South. Like, I had to wear, like, long johns, like, where did you do that, right?
That's how I be when
it snowed on Mother's Day. My first year. So, and mind you, now I'm driving from Syracuse. I'm living on campus at Cornell, but I'm also driving because my wife, she ends up getting a fellowship as well. So she's at Syracuse. So I'm driving,
and that's way out the way. That's the upstate,
right? And I had a 2002 Dodge Stratus. So just think about that. And I'm driving back and forth to spend time with her. But needless to say, man, that when I left, when we both graduated, she graduated a week before I did.
Mm-hmm.
We were actually going to move to Boston because I thought I was going to apply to Harvard Law.
Mm-hmm.
And but we just, you know, when you go to a different place, you kind of know if that's going to be the fit.
Mm-hmm.
We liked Boston, but we felt like it wasn't a good fit. We had kind of put some feelers out there for jobs, and I ended up applying. Claflin had an assistant vice president job for mm-hmm. student development and director of residential life. Mm-hmm. And so I submitted my application and ended up working at Claflin in that role for 6 years.
So did y'all have a deal like whoever, especially since y'all on the same mindset as well,
mm-hmm.
whoever get the first job with the most money, that's what we're going with? Or y'all decide, like,
man, we just wanted to work. So believe it or not, man, this is a funny story. I remember we could not find any jobs. So South Carolina it was home for us. So we were like, okay, our family is there. But mm-hmm. I actually submitted my application to Family Dollars in St. Matthews. And I also applied to Hardee's.
Hold on.
And now, let me tell you what the interviewer said at Family Dollar. She was like, this is funny. It was a management position. He said, so I see where you graduated from Cornell University. So I think you like really like it to qualify for the job. I said, like, man, I just want to work. Mm-hmm. I mean, because one of the things that anyone can tell you about me, like, I believe in working. Like, I don't think, you know, I think if you can learn the streets, that's one thing. But if you can learn to navigate society, that's another. Mm-hmm. And I think working helps build that. So
being good character. Yeah. Before we go on, I gotta give my shout outs. You guys see me doing this episode into the Bone Barbershop, which is located on 1076 Boulevard Street, Orangeburg, South Carolina, 29115. You come see JB, who's cutting. I see Rudy, aka Tyrone Bonaparte. Dennis Gotts for always letting us film here. And also gotta get one more shout out to QTC's collection. You can get all your women clothes. You can do it online. www.qtcscollection.com. If you go on it right now, you get 10% off with any purchase over $50. QTCs.com to the Bone Barbershop. Thank you guys. You gotta make sure you check them out. Okay.
Yeah, man. So I ended up doing the job for about 6 years. Mm-hmm. As the assistant vice president. And so it was a dual role in that capacity. You know, I was working in student development.
So I got a question, because me just hearing your background, hearing your degrees in, was your dream, I'm going to ask you what I think your dream job is. You could tell me wrong.
Okay.
To be a president of Clapham University at that time in your life?
So there was that thought, okay. Right? And people always say, hey, so you was the assistant vice president. But part of it was I needed to learn the role as the assistant vice president. I was one of the youngest AVPs in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated college, graduated from Cornell, and then a couple of months later, I have a job as, you know, higher ed exec.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I wanted to really enjoy that process.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I needed more time. And Randolph's, you know, the Italian ice and the gelato concept kind of came like while I was at Claflin. You know, the president.
What made you go that route? Because let me tell you what I love about this, guys. What you have in Orangeburg, you are one of one.
Thank you, man.
Most people would, honest, us, if you say I'm in the restaurant, I would think collard greens. Nothing. It's a soul food spot. Nothing wrong with that.
Definitely.
I would think either soul food or, let's just say, a chicken joint. What made you choose Italian
ice and gelato, right? Yeah.
That'll mean freshly.
Yeah, man.
Please check it out. And what's the address?
950 Chestnut Street. We're actually on the corner of Chestnut. We're building number 2. And you'll see the sign out front that says Randolph.
Okay. In the description, you can click the link above. It will be available. So you can check it out. And if you're watching this on YouTube, the description will be below. Watch it on Instagram, description below. If you listen to us on podcast format, please look at the description in the podcast and click the description.
I love it, man. No, man. So Italian ice was actually one of the first desserts that my wife and I shared as a couple. We actually, the first desserts. And we fell in love. We fell in love with the dessert so much so that we actually had it at our wedding. And so it just kind of was one of those things where...
It's a love story.
Yeah,
it's
man. So if you look at our logo and you see it, we have the heart, right? The heart is symbolic, not because it's just the logo, but...
I thought it just looked good.
No, the heart is symbolic of just our joining of one, being one with each other, man. So it was the first dessert we had, and I was enjoying my job at Claflin, but I realized... We were coming, I remember this day really, really clearly. We were coming back from, I think, church in Charleston,
mm-hmm.
and we kind of saw like a vendor on the street that had a push cart.
Mm-hmm.
And we always said that we wanted to do something together. And I was like, what can we do that's easy?
And what was your wife doing at this time?
So at this time, Keisha, her background is in marriage and family therapy. She's a mental health therapist. At this time, she was working, I think she was working at the Harf Center, which kind of really worked and specialized in eating disorders, et cetera.
Okay.
And so she was doing that. She actually started working before I was. Remember, I was applying from Hardee's to Panadol and all that.
I'm not going
to
lie. If I was a manager, I wouldn't hire you either.
It's funny. Well, part of it was people were qualifying me based on my background. So when I was in New York, I actually worked for the Center for Community Alternatives that actually looked at restorative and rehabilitative practices for people who were formerly incarcerated.
Uh-huh.
And so what the studies look at there was that you had a lot of people that were applying for jobs and they were not getting them because of their criminal history record. Now, keep in mind, that was my first and only contact with the criminal justice system. But then that was a collateral consequences for me because, and the charge itself was possession of stolen vehicle. I was going out with some of the people that I thought was my friends, not realizing the car itself was stolen. We're having a good time, get pulled over. Everyone, you know, gets locked up. And so not knowing that process and accepting the charge in the state of South Carolina, if anyone asks, have you been, you know, convicted? The answer is yes. And that was my first, my only contact, but it serves as kind of a reminder for me that, you know, we only get one chance at this thing called life. And so working at Claflin, working in that role as AVP kind of was okay. It was kind of like, hey, you graduated, you went to some of the great schools and you need to make it happen. But there was still this desire to want to do more. So I ended up probably starting in 2015. I actually applied to USC in Columbia for my PhD and ended up getting a scholarship there. And May 7th, you know, I'll be officially Dr. Devin Randolph. So, but people, please still call me Devin. You know, I've got a little gray hair, but I'm only 38. So just putting that out there. But I still like to say, man, that so my journey was one that was already predestined. Like the experience that I had with, you know, just making the choices that I had, like it serves as kind of a motivation for me. Looking at issues of race, anti-Semitism, policy, and entrepreneurship. Like this is the world that I operate in. And the business came from me deciding that I really wanted to create wealth in a larger scale. And I also saw that I was only doing it part-time. Now here I am making a great salary at the university, and I was only kind of doing like the little push cart. We found one. It was, I mean, man, this thing was falling apart. And we went to a welder and he ended up putting the cart back together for us. And my wife and I literally had to lift the cart up, put it in our car and just drive to random places. And we grew that one cart into six carts into a company van, the company van into the storefront. So the storefront is like the latest addition. And then that storefront ended up allowing us to establish partnerships between South Carolina. And then we opened our second storefront in Georgia. So we, yeah, we've been kind of, we've been just blessed, man. Like I'm blessed in a way that, like when I look at my life now and just thinking about being 38, you know, getting ready to finish like the last journey of the PhD and being able to teach, you know, at USC and work with issues in the Jewish community, Black community, and being an entrepreneur, like I never would have figured that out.
Wow, brother.
Yeah. I would have never put all that together.
Wow. So y'all go from, so I want to start with the journey at the restaurant. So you at your nice office. I'm about to paint the picture. You're at your nice office at the illustrious Claflin University. You're like, you know what? I want to start making this Thai nice. So you call home, hey sweetheart, that's, well, we just get the steps going. So you go pick up, you go get this one cart. So do you decide from there that you want to, y'all want to make it yourself, or do y'all want to start
Actually, so what happened was we were buying it at first, and we ended up putting in an order for a certain flavor.
And so where were y'all going?
We were actually going to.
I'm not going to shout where y'all was buying it out. Yeah, you're not getting a shout out because if you want you, we want to buy a gallon of ice, we're going to get it from Randolph. But I'm talking about
like what events?
We were just showing up.
Like we would look at like random places. We kind of started off like at the University of Claflin because it kind of made sense. We would do weddings. We actually said we reached our wedding planner who did our wedding. We ended up asking her, hey, could we be an Italianized vendor? And so what we ended up doing was we told her if she allows us to do a couple free events, we won't charge the bride or any of that nature or the groom. And that kind of gave us a space to start selling, you know, Italianized, and people started knowing us for selling it at weddings. But it kind of, we were forced to kind of really start making it because we were supporting a business that didn't really have our best interests. And I'm like, why spend money And so we ended up just really taking some time studying, traveling different places, mm-hmm. Philadelphia, Atlanta, New York, places that people know for Italian ice. And I told her, I was like, I think we could probably do this. And so I just really started doing research, making different iterations of the product. Mm-hmm. We actually took our life savings at this point and just poured it into the business because we really thought it was going to make, we really know what it was going to be.
Man, brother, so that goes to show the kind of faith that your wife has in you.
Oh, definitely.
To see, all right, man, this is what we got. I'm going to back you. And because the stories I keep hearing is, we got in the car, we put it in the car.
Yeah.
We
loaded it. Well, so that we is now, so that we is plural outside of my wife and I. So that we is God in that. So I want to be very clear when I talk about the importance of understanding not only your purpose, but just knowing how God is at the center of this thing. So our business model is based literally off the tithing concept, right? So if you follow anything that we do from any philanthropic mm-hmm. initiatives throughout Orangeburg, it's based on that model, right? You can't be successful or you can't grow without giving back. Right?
My mama is so much shouting right now. He ain't saying that.
Let me tell you. So I've studied, my wife and I have studied this thing where any increase that we received from the business, from our jobs, mm-hmm. from just anything that came into our household, we'd already said, you know what? We're giving this back. And the principle was very simple for us. It was a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. Like, God had to be in this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how can he not be in the fact of someone from St. Matthews, someone who was incarcerated, someone who wasn't the smartest person in the world, right, to meet his helpmate, to have a vision, to leave a job. Now, mind you, when I resigned from Claflin, mm-hmm. When I resigned from Claflin, man, this is the craziest thing. God had already said, Devin, this is time for you to go.
Mm-hmm.
2 years prior, and I mm-hmm. didn't listen. Because I'm like, look, I'm a young professional. I'm making great money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working in kind of my gifts. And it's like, this is not it for you. This is not it. And so that was the most confusing thing for me, because think about the conversation of having with my wife, which I so appreciate her, because when I told her and when it was revealed to us, she said, you're going to have to follow it. Well, and I didn't listen.
She said that.
Yeah. She said, yes, if God is saying that, you need to submit your resignation. So I'm at the top of my career at this point. I'm not even in my 30s yet. And now I'm resigning from a job that I'm making great money. And I resign in the winter. So think about that.
Ain't nobody buying that.
Even though ice cream and the gelato all year round. Yes, but ain't nobody really. But I'll say, though, I started when I was thinking about the business plan for Randolph's.
Mm-hmm.
We did it at 5 years out. What I saw in a year
mm-hmm.
in terms of my salary and benefits, we started seeing that like bi-monthly, like we started seeing that. And so our business grew from like three figures to five, right? From five to six. Mm-hmm. Right. And so when I did the business plan, I tracked the business out to say by year eight, we should be hitting over 1.1 million. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's funny because if I would have listened early, right, if I would have listened to and left early, not to say it was nothing against Claflin, but if I would have left early, we would have already hit our target, right? Because, you know, God operates in time, right, in seasons, right? So we got to be very careful and we got to be very obedient to that, right? So I didn't listen. And that was the thing that I kind of have a regret about. Like, if I would have listened, I would have probably been further ahead.
Well, did it when he said do it.
Correct.
Jesus.
And not ask why. Just do it. And it's through Randolph's, it's through my work with Carolina, like communities, man, that like now I see the bigger picture.
But let me tell you something, brother. I think for those who don't know what tithing is, the tithing is when you get 10% of your earnings increases, just your earnings. And like I said, my mother, who's a pastor, I love her to death. She is on me about that. And she's like, son, I'm telling you, if something happens.
She knows, man.
Because she's like, son, hey, boy, you pay them tithes?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
See? But that God forgives, and that's off from the ground. Yeah. So I love the fact that y'all took it and y'all went.
Yeah.
So, okay, we got a thing. So when does the point say, you know what? So obviously you're making ice creams, the ices, you're doing good. So when do you say, you know what? I'm ready to do a storefront. In Orangeburg. Because I love the fact that y'all stayed in Orangeburg.
Correct. So there's something special about Orangeburg. I mean, people tend to speak against Orangeburg a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something very special about the people, Orangeburg, the culture of Orangeburg. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to be in a place where we saw that there was a need, that mm-hmm. we could actually contribute real time. Right. So any partnership that we establish, we could see wherever we're giving towards, we can see an instant change. Mm-hmm. Like we don't have to go through so much red tape. And Claflin State, you know, you got OC Tech. I mean, you got some Voorhees, Denmark. Some great institutions, great people.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made sense. And we would never, I always say this, people are like, well, why Orangeburg? Because there was a need. And also, we wanted to be in a situation where we could make the most impact.
And which, if people study business, they know supply and demand. See a need, meet the need, successful business.
Correct. And I will say, like, my wife and I talk about this all the time, because we made the decision that she would kind of help the first couple of years of the business, and then she goes back into corporate. And I actually stay out and just kind of really grow the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been, you know, self-employed since 2015, I think. And so, I mean, the USC work and, you know, teaching, I don't look at that as a job.
Yeah,
that's my passion. You know, that's where my heart is. But
that's a little different too.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, and it's a beautiful thing. It's hard work, but we didn't want to just be a black owned business in Orangeburg. Like, we wanted to be a business who the owners happen to be black, that anyone,
there's a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone who comes into Randolph's, we want to greet them with love, respect. We want to make sure that we emphasize customer service.
Yeah, I do.
We were the first, true town and gown partnerships where Claflin students, could come in and use their Panther Bucks and swipe their ID card. Percentage goes back to the university, first and only business. We're actually in talks with SC State, and shout out to Dr. Jackson. I just spoke to her today, VP of Student Affairs, just to really put the proposal on the table of giving students opportunities to have a kiosk where they can serve Italian ice and gelatos and use their ID cards, and State gets a percentage back.
Who came up with that concept?
So, I mean, part of it was, so if you want to give back, you have to figure out, how do you make the greatest impact? Like, who is your audience? Mm-hmm. What institutions, organizations, businesses have the most demand? Like, why does that matter? Mm-hmm. And Claflin, because of what they did for me in terms of my own educational experiences, mm-hmm. they had to be the first. And students always wanted something off campus. It's never enough things on campus. And because I was working in student affairs, I kind of anticipated and saw that need. And so, and it also allowed me to really talk to key people to say, hey, I think this would be a great initiative for us to do in Orangeburg. And so we did it, and we hadn't really, I mean, people know about it, but we still need to do a little bit more investment in that area. Cause, you know, I think the more students that know about it, you know,
They know about it now.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if they don't know, they do know now. But no, man, that was something that we wanted to figure out. How do we? Because there's always different levels of business that you mm-hmm. want to operate in. Mm-hmm. Like the first couple years, you really want to find your brand. You really want to make sure that you're doing the research, you're doing the right investments,
mm-hmm.
and then you want to scale that up in a way that it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Brother, my mind is getting blown with that's why I tell everybody, I do every time I love doing interviews, because I find out something I didn't know. So, okay, so you open up the shop, and I want to go back on something.
Mm-hmm.
You say you're not a black owned business. You're a business that is happening to be black. Let me tell you, I know that's very true. Because I hate to say it, sometimes when it comes to black owned businesses, sometimes the only patrons are us. And there's nothing wrong with the support. Sure, we should pack us out. But when I, the few times I've been there, I've always seen the guys at the job, and I called my other cousins. I said, oh, look at my other cousins in here. My other cousins. And
funny, I never heard it say
that. Yeah, because I've seen different people. I've even seen during the summertime, I would see the camps.
Yeah, man.
Post like we had. And I'm like, in these camps, it's not all our camps. And I'm like, just give me a sign, because I'm like, sometimes we have to like, I hate when people try to prove their worth. Correct. I think that your business and the atmosphere speaks for itself. So, let's go there.
Yeah.
Time that's because I'd rather go to yours than other place that start with a P.
Correct.
Come on, get them love, because we see this man. We see him in the community.
Correct.
And it also helps that he looks like me, because then, and with this story, like, oh, this guy.
Correct.
Hey, Joe, look. Look at Mr. Randolph.
Yeah, so you said something, man, that, you know, I want to kind of go back to. So, about Randolph, so when we started to think about who we wanted to be, we wanted to make sure that we become the best in the industry and get the best, you know, certification standards, et cetera. So we're certified South Carolina, which means that all of our fruits, our process, we partner with our local farmers. We have a partnership with the state's farmers market in Columbia. We handpick, we hand select our vendors in terms of where we purchase our fruits from. And we're making it from start to finish. So we're not cutting corners. So I want to be very clear, because when people think of Italian ice, especially they tend to say, and we just had this happen when we were at state, they tend to assume that that snow cone or slushies is the same as Italian ice, or ice cream is the same as gelato, and they're totally different. And so the care in terms of what we take in our process is something that's important to us. So in order for us to have that particular certification by the Department of Agriculture, South Carolina Department of Agriculture, we have to make sure that we're implementing the highest quality and standards in our process. And so that's the first thing. The second is gelato was something that was a later addition because I wanted people to be exposed to something different. Like, we know ice cream, right? We know sorbets, we know sorbettos, we know all of these types of things, but gelato is something different, right? It's different in a way, because it's not something that you hear a lot of people talk about. But we wanted to offer something that was premium than ice cream.
In Orangeburg.
In Orangeburg. And so the gelatos kind of took off, because we were just kind of playing around with them, and they kind of took off. So gelato is a healthier option than ice cream. So it's low in fat. We don't use any added sugars, and it's a different process in general. So when you think about ice cream, you got high saturated fat, you have empty calories. So people who are health conscious, they're always going to want to have something that's healthier. And we're in a society that people are more health conscious, right? So, and the food came later. So we wanted to open year round. So we're like, what could we offer that can kind of be for the winter months? So we had a hot menu that we came out. We did stuffed waffles. We offer us.
Let me tell you the only problem I got, and I heard my other picture. Sometimes, and I understand, because I guess the situation, I wish y'all be open a little later.
Yeah, so we have certain. So this is how the schedule is right now. We're at 11 to 5.
Okay,
because we're on we're kind of on our fall schedule.
Okay.
Starting in December, we go to the initiative called Weekends at Randolph. So that's kind of a later option for people, Thursday through Saturday. Starting from March up until probably the end of October. To the beginning of October, our hours are Tuesday through Saturday from 11 to 7.
Okay, so I'm going to make sure you guys say that. So you're going to start opening on Saturdays now?
So we was always open on Saturdays. We just closed now early. So, and then also we partner with the local YMCA. And so we run all of their concessions, because that partnership allows us to give back to the Y. So we have, so people who come in like, you know, to the water park. Mm-hmm. When the water park opens up, they can come to Randolph's there. We have our Italian ice and gelatos at the water park too.
Wow.
And then you mentioned the camps. Sometime, and that's been the challenge when we have all these partnerships, the camp was kind of the first of its kind where we partnered with the 1890 program at South Carolina State, mm-hmm. where we had kids come in to really talk to them about entrepreneurship. Like, we realized that maybe not everyone wants to own an Italian ice shop or go into an Italian ice and gelato business, but we wanted to expose youth to entrepreneurs, but also give them the skills that they need from a business perspective. So they worked on business plan. They worked on product development. They actually created their own product. We helped them throughout the entire process. And we actually featured their product on our Italian ice and gelato bar. And that was the first ever partnership that we created through the camp.
Brother, you have no choice but to be successful. You, I'm pretty sure business, you really are an orange bird business. I love the way you are aligning yourself with all these different camps and businesses, definitely, the university, because then that's different audiences.
Yeah, but you also have to check the value in that, right? Because it goes back to that tithing. Like, I mean, that's our way of giving. Like, so yes, you want a business to be successful, right? I mean, anyone does, you know, no one wants a business to fail.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to realize that the business is based off people, mm-hmm. right? And if you don't have people that support you, mm-hmm. or if you're not giving back, then you don't need to be in the community. Like, so I always tell people, they're like, oh, you know,
and it's a restaurant I'm not going to name that y'all know I went hard on, and they sell red wings. And they sell red wings.
Well, I'm going to help you out on that, man.
And y'all don't, I ain't never seen them. I ain't never seen them on no football jerseys. I ain't never seen them in no camps. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it's something, and that's why I tell people, like, you know, we got to look at what businesses are doing in the community, right? Like, you check our track record. Like, you may say, you know what, I can go to this place and get this cup for this price.
Mm-hmm.
But people pay for quality.
Correct.
Like, I pay, and if I have to negotiate a price, whether someone's coming up to the cart and say, oh, your cup's a little higher,
mm-hmm.
or your price in the store is higher,
mm-hmm.
maybe I can't afford it. And maybe I need to put myself in a position where I can afford it or go someplace else. So I always tell people, like, quality speaks. Like, when
that's another thing I don't like, because would they ask the other person to change their price?
So that's the other part. Like, yeah. and it's something you spoke and that happened to us, where we have people wanting to negotiate prices. And I always say to people, like, we are making this product. So I can't tell my farmer that I'm working with or going to the state farmer's market, oh, I need, can you sell me 100 pounds of strawberries for $30 a month when they're normally $63.40. Like, man, that's not right.
The price is the price. I never seen nobody go to McDonald's window and say, why the burger cost that much?
Correct.
Your price is your price.
Correct. But we try to work, like, when we have organizations that reach out to us to ask us to do events, we try to work with them, because our business is kind of based on, like, three arms. So we have kind of the retail location. Mm-hmm. We have the South Carolina location. We have our other storefront in Georgia. All that falls under retail. And then we kind of have the catering services, where we pop up to any locations.
Do it anywhere.
Correct. And we distribute. So we have a number of clients that also have their own.
That's what I want to get to.
And we distribute. And then, you know, we also partner with the Piggly Wiggly. So off of Columbia Road. And, you know, so people can go to aisle 10 and get our mango.
So now you have no excuses. If you can't make it to the store,
you can go to aisle 10 on the Piggly Wiggly, in the Piggly Wiggly section, frozen section, I should say.
And Columbia Road. Mm-hmm. And you can't miss it. It got Randolph's on it.
Yep. And it's a black and white cow cup.
Black and white cow cup on aisle. Now, let me tell you something you said earlier that I think this might go back to your study, your studies at the prestigious Cornell University and Claflin University and Carolina, because everybody know I'm a Gamecock fan. But when we're talking about people trying to negotiate, I think that is conditioning. I think that is conditioning in our neighborhoods and environments, because we always want. I don't think we might not value each other as much. I think we might have to do so value.
Well, so now we might have to do a part two, because you're talking about kind of like the research that I do now. So part of it is that, yes, condition is part of it. But I think the other piece of it is that we as owners feel like we have to water down the quality of who we are just to get accepted into certain spaces. Mm-hmm. And I think the part of that is a danger to us. Like, if you have a business, whether it's a barbershop, mm-hmm. whether it's whatever your business, your brand is, it's your brand. But what people don't understand is the storefront was the latest addition. Mm-hmm. Like, that's 2.5-3 years old. It started from, we call it the cart ministry. It started from my wife and I going to a welder and lifting up a cart. Like, mm-hmm. that little cart ended up growing mm-hmm. into Randolph's. So it wasn't that we set out and say, okay, we wanted to have a storefront.
Okay.
But in terms of going back to your point about conditioning, like, this is something that we have to be very careful when we talk to owners, when we talk about pricing. Mm-hmm. You don't want to price yourself out of the market.
Correct.
You also want people to understand that there's a quality. Now, if I was buying Italian ice and gelato for someone, yeah, maybe I can sell a dollar cup in my store.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm buying it for someone. But I am the artisan in residence at Randolph's, meaning I am the person that's taking the product from here to the cup.
And making it.
So, I mean, that is experience. And I'm opening, and my kitchen is open. Like, mm-hmm. anyone who comes into Randolph's,
you see, you know, let me tell you something you don't know. Sometimes we never know the impact of shout out to Brother Devin. We talked about before we came on here. And I said, I've been in this restaurant. My face looked familiar. What you don't know is the day we came in there, you was literally in the back making a batch. Wow. Came out and spoke to us. You remember this? She was there. My daughter behind the camera. And my son was there. He was younger then. You literally came out the back because we got the pineapple.
Pineapple thing.
What's
so you didn't tell. That's why.
Yes,
that's
yes,
why
yes.
When I said, why do I
yes,
know
you? Yes.
Got it.
I saved it for the camera. I got the pineapple.
I love the pineapple. That's awesome.
And he came out the back. We was like, I brought him out the back. Said, hello. Is everything right? Join it. Okay. I'm glad you're going back. I got to go finish making. I don't know what you're making, because we just had got the banana pudding. I think about the banana.
Yeah.
I'm saying banana pudding. I know it's called banana pudding.
Enough. Yeah, it's banana pudding gelato. Yep.
Banana pudding. Yep. We got a strawberry one. I'm like, anything is really good. And I was like, man, this brother doing this job. Restaurant looks very nice.
Thank you, man.
And
shout out to Keisha and our brand strategist, Gabriel from Charleston. They kind of, we know what we wanted, but they kind of had the vision. They put their touches on that, man.
Can you go in there? Because sometimes our people, we have a thing. I said it's going to be sheetrock and benches. You go in there, I call it the new modern industrial look with the thing. I said, okay. I said, this brother, that's it for real. Then just to hear the story behind it. If you guys do not go out and go buy some gelato, I don't care if it's an hour 10, I don't care if it's from the restaurant.
Yeah.
This you are living what we say we want.
Man, I appreciate it, man. It's not possible without being connected to the source.
And you give credit to the source, your wife, and the principles. I tell people,
yeah,
people don't agree with it, but tithing is principles. So that means whether you agree, disagree,
yeah,
it's their principles going to work.
Yes,
and most people, the success people, they don't call it tithing. They just call it giving back.
Yeah,
and being philanthropic. I jacked that word up. But you're right, it is a
process, and then it's also something that, when you are an entrepreneur, like, mm-hmm. my goal now is always about developing people,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's not that I want to be the person that runs a multimillion dollar empire,
mm-hmm.
and no one knows how to do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of the team members from David my brother, to even Javon, who Robinson, who actually was the manager at Randolph's, mm-hmm. and he was Javon, maybe 18, mm-hmm. And he was the person that was running Randolph's. When I say running, between him and David, before David came on board, Javon was from scheduling to talking about product development, and he's a teenager. Like, I mean, Javon may be 19 now, mm-hmm. And he just went off to college. But when we see people, like if you look at our staff, like I'm the oldest person. Well, David is the oldest person there. He mm-hmm. probably don't.
David the gig.
But I mean, like everyone is teenagers. Like, so we believe in developing people, man.
So right now, so your wholesalers are coming to you and says, all right, Devin, you said about a pound or the gallon.
Yeah,
or...
so we do 2 gallon buckets.
Okay, so mm-hmm. Devin, I want, because obviously if they buy it, they want to go take it to events, do it itself.
Yeah.
So that part of your thing, I want to buy 2 pounds of this, 2 gallons of that. Da, 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 da.
Yeah. So the distribution side of it is, so normally during the summer, I mean, we started off doing probably about maybe 100 containers a season. That was running early April to probably October.
Mm-hmm.
And then that just kind of grew. The distribution kind of grew into its own division. And so we have people that say, hey, I want to start Italian Ice and gelato business. We give the counseling, the business development, and we tell them and show them electronically what we make, give them an order form, just mm-hmm. like you would order online. And they submit their order. We fill their order, and we ship their order out. We deliver it to them personally, or they come to the store and pick it up.
So do you plan on, I know you're ordering up another spot in Georgia. You want to say location? You want to say location?
Yeah, we're at Columbus, Georgia.
Okay, Columbus, mm-hmm. Columbus, Georgia. Is the end goal, I don't even want to speak about the goal, is the goal to just franchise it, or you rather keep more of a grip on it than franchise it?
Yeah, so the goal now for Randolph's is to continue to create wealth from a community standpoint. Mm-hmm. Like, we're really big on servant leadership and really building our people on staff to really do mm-hmm. the work. The franchising has not been kind of a concept, but we've had people that approach us to ask to buy the brand, the name, and mm-hmm. and for us, it's not about that. We want this interaction. We want mm-hmm. this personal experience, but we also realize that we're growing at a rate that we're going to have to stop. Like next year, we have some very large contracts that we are really trying to figure out how we're going to make it happen. I mean, I'm talking about Fortune 500 companies that could most likely carry Randolph throughout all states. And that may sound good to some people, like, oh man, you should do it. Right. But I go back to the Piggly Wiggly concept. Like, people say, well, why don't you just, you know, go to Walmart and such, you know, we were accepted and approved to sell in Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it's like, you want to be in a place that one values who you are,
mm-hmm.
nothing against Walmart. But when I walk into Piggly Wiggly on Columbia Road and I know the pig and who the owners are and the people are the owners, so to me, that speaks to me. And mm-hmm. that tells me that I want to invest into places that are fertile, right?
Mm-hmm.
Long-term, I mean, I think what we're going to do and what we kind of see on the horizon is we're going to have to pull back because the type of contracts that we're signing and launching is going to require us having to really bring a lot of people on board, because we opened our second location. A lot of people didn't know, but I would leave on Wednesday
mm-hmm.
And come back on Sunday. I would drive when we first opened the location. All of the equipment, everything, investment set up there. And I would drive until I found a team. I would drive 5.5 hours. I would leave the house on Wednesday or Thursday. And I did that for about 2 months until we found the team.
So now you might be like, I'm just going to pop up.
Correct.
Whatever time, because we don't want to tell the workers when you're going to pop up.
Correct. Correct. And it's about, and it's about, and it's about building people. It goes back to that, that model. Like, yes, giving is one component, but you got to have the right people that understand the brand, right? If they don't understand the brand and they don't believe in it, then you're doing yourself and them a disservice.
Yeah, I got my I had an interview, shout out B Juice, and he said his hardest thing is employees.
Yeah. Because you're talking about, man, so I'll give you an example. You may run, you may have an event outside of the storefront that nets $20,000-$30,000, right? Mm-hmm. And now you see $20,000-$30,000 out of the card or cash, and you got to understand and have a person that you trust to not only manage that and bring it back, so, or whatever that looks like, right? I mean,
I've seen some. All I'm saying is, I'm not going to say who, because they might be on here. Shout out to you. Y'all know who y'all is. I have seen. I ain't going to snitch. I just see how. If I just know this, if I ever have an establishment, a restaurant, I know what to look for.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I'm like, wow.
Definitely. It's some risk that you take in that. And you know, part of it is you want to find the right people, and you want to be able to trust the people to make it happen.
That's why it's a good management too.
Correct. And then also surrounding yourself with other great leaders, like, you know, people that we know and people that we're connected to, their knowledge, their investments, who they are. That's important. Mm-hmm. Like, I always believe that I want to surround myself with people that are smarter than I am, mm-hmm. but people that can kind of help me see things that I may not see.
Correct.
Right. So that means I need to walk out of the store for a couple of months and show up and just look to see, okay, man, this is not saying the right vibe, or mm-hmm. whatever that is, I have to do it. And the same way I approach my research, like, right now I'm working on, you know, the dissertation and finishing that up, but it's working with African-American males who have been referred to alternative programs, because mm-hmm. I was in an alternative program. A lot of mm-hmm. people didn't know that, but understanding their voices and their experiences, right? And how mm-hmm. we can use that to help change the narrative about mm-hmm. looking at them as an asset-based framework versus a deficit. And working with, you know, Jewish and African-American communities, because, you know, a little history lesson, a lot of people don't realize that the relationship throughout civil rights stemmed from Jewish and African-American people mm-hmm. on the front line, mm-hmm. right? And that relationship was very important to mm-hmm. kind of the civil rights. And eventually it dissolves, right? And so part of my lens from the research standpoint is looking at how do we build communities in a way that we have people interfacing with each other, mm-hmm. right? And interfacing in a positive way and creating the wealth. And wealth is not just financial. Like, wealth is here mm-hmm. as well. And how do we create that environment where people are working, they're working in a way that it's beautiful, man. And I know it can happen, and I see it happen. And I think entrepreneurship is the easiest way to kind of get at some of those issues, which is why I am still in the space.
Let me tell you something, brother. We have to come back on and do another episode.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Because, we got to make it happen, man.
Because I have a love for, I'm going to just say, thinking. I love books and stuff.
Yeah.
And I love to teach, because a lot of stuff that people are letting me, they don't have knowledge of. And people think, they look at me like, I don't even know all that. It's because I read. Don't judge my change.
Yeah.
But I read, and I think it's very knowledgeable. And that is very.
Yeah. So I think that, and you have to read things that you're uncomfortable about. Like, so yes, racism is something that we all know about, mm-hmm. but we got to really understand it, right? From a policy level, from a community level, from an individual level. When people are like, oh, you are a black man looking at, you know, Jewish issues, like what's that about? But we got our own issues. But I think there's an important concept to understand the intersectionality of how our common experiences are more alike than separate.
Correct.
And we have to learn about other cultures. We have to understand how our experiences help change narratives.
Yeah.
Right. So
adopt some of those ways, because
collectively, if you think about the spending power of the African American community, like, you think about our spending power, man, mm-hmm. we are represented largely and have mm-hmm. one of the greatest spending powers financially in mm-hmm. the economy. But yet, you know, we still are not working in a space that help bridge the gap.
To try to keep down. That's why I like. That's why I like now. Like I think I brought some ice. Some like if I go, I'm going to buy ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I buy? I'm gonna just say X brand Italian icy when I can buy Randolph's ices right, right there. Cause then, cause I know what Randolph's probably looks like.
Correct.
And I know what neighborhood they in. I know what city they are in.
Right. And it's about the experience, right? It's about the quality. Like I can tell you, like I've tasted.
It's good.
I've tasted like Italian ice
mm-hmm.
when I went to Philly
mm-hmm.
or when I went to London and Amsterdam. Like I've tasted like Italian ice. I've tasted mm-hmm. gelatos. I know the difference. Mm-hmm. Like people, you can't tell me when it comes to like certain experiences that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I know it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a part of it. Like my wife will tell you like my bookshelf. Yes, it has like my racism, Jewish, African, all of that. But then I also have a huge portion that talks about the gelatos, like learning about cultures, why gelato is important, Italian ice, et cetera.
Anything that you are involved in, I think you should study it.
Definitely.
You should get involved in it. You should know, like, man.
Yeah.
Man, brother, I'm not going to lie to you, Devin. Devin, you called me for a loop. Shout out to St. Matthews.
Shout out to St. Matthews, yes.
Let me see. So now you know, because one thing I know him for, sports.
Yeah, that's true.
Not sports.
That's true.
Athletes.
Yeah.
So now one day they're gonna say, you know, St. Matthew, that's where Devin Randolph, the CEO of Randolph's and Company.
Hey, man,
and I'm gonna say
it.
I got an early interview.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Look, I'm happy to come back anytime. Look, I appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you, sir.
Like these types of conversation I think is so important. And the barbershop is a place that's very special, especially for mm-hmm. you know, individuals that come in, man. So, I mean, I am honored that you thought about having me on the show. I really appreciate the work that you're doing, man.
I appreciate it.
I'm glad when you called, I'm like, hey, let's make it happen. Let's make it happen.
Because I reached out, because I shoot in blind, because I like when I see not brothers and sisters. Shout out to my, I don't have some papa sisters on.
Yeah.
I was like, when I see people doing different things, and I don't have people in different walks, but like,
yeah,
I don't know nobody that own a gelato shop.
Yeah.
Do you know about a gelato shop besides you?
No, I don't. I don't. It's funny because I don't.
Yeah.
So I'm saying
that's the thing. And they had the story you have, because I didn't know your story until you told your story today. So now everybody know your story. And I love it. I thank you for being episode 73. But before we close out,
mm-hmm.
anything you want to tell the people?
No, I thank you guys for hearing about my story. Look, I am a normal person, right, from St. Matthews, and just, you know, a little bit of faith, you know, a little bit of trusting the process and trusting, you know, the bigger vision of what God has and connecting to the right people. We are not there yet. You know, we have a lot of growth that we can do from Randolph's, from research, and all of that, but you know, especially when you have people like Marvin that's really doing some good work. Thank you all for tuning in. And you know, you got a lifetime subscriber for me, man. I'm glad that
I thank you, bro.
I'm still keep following, man. So
I appreciate it, brother. You got this episode 73. Shout out to Urs Robinson, who's episode 72. You guys, hey, hit that like, hit that share button.
Definitely.
This is Martha Sports and Life signing out.